Now you're looking for the secret. But you won't find it because, of course, you're not really looking. You don't really want to work it out. You want to be fooled.
Welcome to another bonus episode of Cinema Crespediso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, hanging out with Juicy Cogburn Drew.
What up?
All right. We are here with another Crespediso Film School, where we pick a topic, a person, or whatever. So far, it's been all directors, but we'll break that mode.
Eventually.
When we get tired of, or run out of directors where I know a lot about, like, shit, now I gotta do research. No, just move on to
it. Screw that. Move on to something else.
What else do I know off the top of my head? We're doing the one and only Christopher Nolan for film school this month. And really, for working directors today, working filmmakers, if there's anyone you were gonna look at their body of work, look at their career trajectory, and try to learn something from it, can you do any better than Christopher Nolan?
I don't think so.
I mean, he's like,
I really don't. I mean,
he is it.
He went from nothing,
to something.
Like, he makes these weird movies, and then, you know, Batman comes along and blows
everybody.
Spoiler
alert, Batman. Christopher Nolan made Batman. Spoiler alert.
And he made you know, some other awesome movies in between the Batman movies.
He's got one coming out pretty soon.
It's gonna be awesome.
We'll be talking about that. So, yeah, what else did we do? Before we did, the last one was David Fincher.
Correct.
Which we did, that was last month. Go ahead and check that one out. That was a good one. We talked about all his film, his music videos and stuff, as well as movies he directed.
Because he did a lot of music videos.
He did a lot of music videos. And then, that was only the second one. The first one we did was Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
And his decades-long career.
Ridiculous.
Oh my God, so many movies. So many movies.
Talk about a working man.
That one took a minute. So go ahead and check those episodes out. Martin Scorsese, David Fincher. We're now moving on to
the aforementioned.
This one guy who we were talking about?
Christopher Nolan.
We will get to down the road. Who else are we going to do? We're going to do Darren Aronofsky. That might be next. Like I said before, I'm doing one on Steven Seagal, based on the Seagalogy as a text. Go out there, people. Get the Seagalogy book, Seagalogy Study of the Ass-Kicking Films of Steven Seagal, by Vern. It's only one name, Vern. And trust me, get it. Read it. That's the textbook. That's where the pop quizzes are going to come from. Drew, you may want to read my copy, because I'm gonna
be referencing it a lot.
I'm going to be grilling you on that Seagalogy. And then when it's all said and done, we'll all be certified Seagologists.
I'm not sure if that's a good thing.
No, it's a great thing. You're right. It's not a good thing. It's a great thing.
If you say so.
We're going to talk about different film styles, film genres, maybe technical stuff, you know, here and there. But
yeah, because I know so much about the technical side of filmmaking.
Well, then I'll be teaching you some of the technical side of filmmaking. But before we get to any of that, Christopher Nolan. So let's go ahead and let's get this started here. Let me just drop that in and okay.
Drop that beat, Chris.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
All right. Did you know, Drew, that Christopher Nolan is red and green colorblind?
No, I did not.
Now you know.
That makes me want to make some silly posters that he can't read.
Yeah. It makes me want to watch all of his movies now and look for the lack of red and green everywhere.
Yeah,
there it goes. Man, hang on. Because if he can't see those colors, then
he's not going to use them.
He ain't using them. He's not making a Christmas movie anytime soon. Much to Shane Black's chagrin. Ooh, Shane Black. That'd be a short one. Just going over. I got a little bit of trivia here. I'm trying to figure out how I want to sprinkle this stuff out. And some quotes. some things that he said, some of his words. But like anyone else, I guess we'll start at the beginning. Christopher Nolan, his first film. Do you have his filmography there?
Yeah, I got it.
His first film is Following from 98?
Yes.
All right.
Rated R, right. 1 hour, 9 minutes.
Rated R. Hour 9?
Correct.
All right. So I would have pegged it like right at 90, but it was a little longer than that.
An hour 9.
It's a noirish type film, and not just because it's in black and white.
Less, dude. It's only 70 minutes.
109?
No. 1 hour,
yeah.
9 minutes.
1 hour. Oh, 1 hour, 9 minutes. I'm thinking 109 minutes.
No. 1 hour, 9 minutes. Oh, 70 okay. minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought it was short. I was like, man, that sounded long. I thought it was it's very short.
Yeah, 70 minutes.
For a feature-length film, it actually falls just a 10 bit short. But it's good. And you know what? That shortness helps because it's tight. There's not a lot of fluff on that movie. Following is about... it takes place in London because that's where he was living at the time, Christopher Nolan. And it's about a dude who's a writer. And he gets a lot of his inspiration by... He picks a random person on the street. Like, he's just hanging out. He's at a cafe. He sees a person over there. Oh, that person looks interesting. When they get up and leave, he follows him. And then he follows him around as much as he can. So he's got an idea of what they do throughout their day.
Who they are.
And he tries to get inspiration for his writing that way. Hence, Following. Pretty early on, he follows the wrong person. In that... The dude right away picks up that he's being followed, and he's got some nefarious... he's up to nefarious things while he's being followed, and he's going to go and suck this guy in into his shenanigans.
Okay.
And the writer's just going to go along with it because he's just looking for inspiration or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's just living his life, seeing what's going on, living recklessly.
Yep.
And now, typical Nolan fashion... Things get a little twisted and jumbled up there, like a Rubik's Cube a bit. And then at the end, at the very, very end, a bunch of little moves, all of a sudden, boom, Rubik's Cube is like, it's fixed. And, and you're like, whoa, and then the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God damn, that's what that was all about.
That's usually what he does.
That's usually what he does. Yeah. And it's evident right there in his very first movie. It took him 1 year to shoot the film. That's because they filmed, A, when they had the money to buy the film stock.
Yeah.
Because he shot it on film. And B, all the actors in the movie, all the quote actors, they're all just friends, people that had day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They had to get together on weekends.
Yeah.
So it was whenever they had the money to get the film.
Whenever they had the time.
And then whenever they had the time to actually get together, they were able to get together and shoot like on a Saturday and get 15 minutes of footage at a time. Because that's as much film as they could fucking buy in one shot.
Yeah.
I think he said the movie cost a couple £1,000. When it was all said and done, not very much at all.
$6,000,
which, well, exchange rates have changed in the last 15 years. So anyway, but yeah, it was obviously super cheap. But I read something where is that in here, actually? Is that one of these quotes? Yeah, this is a good one. This is very telling about the quote, independent film scene in the UK at the time. It may have changed since then, but here we go. At the time I did Following, 1998, I was looking at the American ultra-low-budget model that really didn't exist in the UK. A low-budget film in England tended to be about £500,000 to £600,000.
Damn.
God damn. In America, there was a tradition of guys like Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Smith making movies for thousands, and that's what we'd been doing for short films. So it's really just a case of using that knowledge, expanding it to feature length. I hear a lot of people doing it in the UK now, and I think that's a great thing. So it's caught on in the UK.
Yep.
I found that very interesting that he name dropped Rodriguez and Smith there because, you know, 97, 98, that's a couple years after Clerks.
Yeah.
That's also a couple years after El Mariachi. I think those two movies combined cost about maybe less than $20,000 to make both those movies combined. So he saw that and he mimicked it and he took his time. He was patient with, I saw another thing. It was like an equation of sorts. If you do independent filmmaking, there are three options for approaching a movie. Okay, you can take your time. What is it? It's like you can take your time and be good. You can get out really fast. God damn it. See, now I wish I could remember. It was like a combination of three. It was three things that three options, but you could only pick two of them.
Yeah.
And it was either you had like no money and take your time and it'll be good, or you could rush it but might not be good, or, you know, it's crazy. But for following, it was super cheap. Black and white. That was more of a necessity than a stylistic choice, but it's still...
That's the way most people's first movies are.
That is the way a lot of first movies are, and it looks beautiful. Yeah. I mean, if you look at it now, black and white film looks fantastic. That's, like, what if you shot it on video? The right 98 video? Ooh, America's Funniest Home Videos right there. So it's good. And you, this is the one Nolan film you have not seen, Drew?
Correct.
You should see it.
I should. Agreed.
You should totes see it, dude. Hey, I don't want to Google nothing right now. I gotta have it.
Google's asking you, what do you want to find out?
Yeah, it's like, no, I need to. Yeah, this is my bad. Also, not only the puzzle aspect of the movie. I don't want to really say puzzle, because the movie's not much of a puzzle movie. It's more of a... like a psychological thriller type of thing, where it's like, oh shit, all this shit was happening, I didn't even know. You know, like the game type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
Bless you. One more time. Give me one more.
Nope. Only two this time.
Damn it. And, but there's other things that happen in following that comes up throughout his other movies I will talk about. The main thing is that he plays a lot with throughout his movies. And I don't know if this is a conscious thing or a subconscious thing, because, you know, art's crazy like that.
Yeah.
But it deals very much with identity, who like who the writer is, who the person he's following, who that guy turns out to be, assuming identities, things like that. That's a very prominent motif throughout Nolan's career. I mean, it comes up immediately with his very next movie.
Memento.
2000?
Correct.
That's what it says? Sundance hit. He got a lot of his money for Memento from, actually it says right here, he gained major funding during the 1999 Hong Kong Film Festival by showing his film Following and then asking the audience to donate money to Memento.
Oh, nice.
I think Memento ended up costing $2 million, which is still extremely low budget in terms of, you know, major movie making.
Yeah.
But, I mean... For him, going from a few thousand pounds to $2 million?
Yeah, that's crazy. It's nuts.
That's huge. I remember hearing or either reading an interview or seeing an interview with him a while ago where he talked about doing that transition from the independent following where it was like him.
And some friends.
Him, some friends, like no real crew, you know. Like he was probably using the operating the camera himself and shit to a movie set that had union workers there, right? At one point, he said he had to, like, he wanted to move a light. He's like, he didn't like where the light was, so he went to move some of the, pick up the sandbags, move the light, and someone started like, yo, what are you doing? No, 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 and dressed them down. It's like, no, you don't do that stuff. Get out. That's our job. You want to move? Tell us to move it, and we'll move it, but that's our job. Don't be doing our job. And he was like, oh, shit, he had to learn. So, like, he couldn't run around and do all these things on a unionized set like that, which is very interesting. Because he did, and there's a huge jump to go from I'm making my own movie my own way to all right, now here's the way movies are really made.
Yeah.
And he didn't go to film school. That's like some people go to film school, like we talked about Scorsese went to film school, NYU film school.
Correct.
Where then he went back to teach people like Oliver Stone and Spike Lee. Spike Lee is now teaching at NYU. You know, it's a cycle. But then there are other people like the aforementioned Rodriguez or Kevin Smith or Christopher Nolan, where their film schools go out and do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's very inspiring. It's people should. I mean, these guys, none of them, when they were making their first movie, they were like, they didn't think about down the road, oh, I'm going to maybe, I mean, they had aspirations, but they weren't worried about that shit. They're just like, let me just make this movie here right now. Let me just tell this story the best I can, and maybe it'll and maybe open some doors.
Maybe I'll get Batman.
Maybe I'll get to work with Quentin Tarantino on multiple projects. Maybe I'll become best friends with Ben Affleck and make like four movies with him, you know? I mean, so many things can happen. You gotta go out there and fucking try, though.
Yeah.
You gotta do it. Hey, this quote kind of leans into that, so... Christopher Nolan said, I didn't go to film school. I guess my whole experience has been just to make films. What I've talked about on the commentary to the DVD of Following is the production method and how things came about. I feel like there might be a point of interest that a lot of people might be thinking about their own films, so I tried to put in as much of the detail as I can remember. That is very interesting. I haven't seen any of the commentary tracks on his more recent movies, like Inception or Batman. I don't even know if he did commentary tracks for those. But for, like you mentioned, for Following, for Memento, for Insomnia, and I think for The Prestige, he has very, very detailed, very informative commentary tracks. The Insomnia commentary track, we'll get to that movie in a minute, when you watch, when you put it with the commentary on, it doesn't play the movie in order. It plays the movie in the order that he shot the scenes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, here we go. This is the first. This is the very first scene we shot. This is day one, and then as it goes on in production, the movie bounces back and forth. It's fucking fascinating.
Weird.
Yeah. Memento.
It's pretty much the same way.
Has its own. Well, it has its own. The special edition DVD has its own little trick special feature you can find, where you can play the movie backwards, starting with the final credits.
So it actually makes sense.
So it makes linear sense. But then I tried it, and I felt like certain scenes were missing.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, I don't know. It felt like they cheated, but they took some scenes out. But, so Memento came out. Not in 2000.
2000.
Sundance Film Festival.
1 hour, 53 minutes.
Huge fucking critical hit. Huge film festival hit, like at Sundance, and people lost their mind over it.
It's because it makes you think.
It's a crazy movie. It's got a moral conundrum at the end.
There is a lot of nonsense going on, and like you said, it's non-linear storytelling. So yeah. you gotta like sit there and be like, okay, so that happened, so then this happened, so blah, blah, and you've gotta, you know, remember all of these things for it to make any sense.
There is always that wonderful moment with movies like that where the movie starts out like, I don't get it. Movie doesn't make sense. I don't get what's going on. And then something clicks for you. Like, oh, I see what they're doing.
No.
And it's like, yes, now I get it. This is unique and different and wonderful. And I'm along for the ride. I remember that movie kicking my ass when I saw it in the theater.
Yeah. Well, I never saw it in theaters, but I remember...
packed theater, too.
I remember when I saw it, that movie kind of was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah.
So...
I remember seeing the trailer for it a bunch of times and then be like, oh, like Guy Pearce did it. He did it. He's looking for himself the whole time. I was like, I got to figure it out. I knew. I was like, that's it.
Do you remember the tagline from Memento?
The tagline was, remember it backwards.
Some memories are best forgotten.
Oh! Hi-yo! Take that. Good stuff, marketing department. $2 million, and it made its money. It made more than its money. It made enough to put Christopher Nolan on the map as the new, young, hot, interesting director. At that time, it was him, aforementioned Aronofsky. Sam Mendes was hot off of American Beauty. There's an interesting crop of directors that popped up there. And it is interesting to look back now and see that Christopher Nolan's the one that really rose to the top.
Oh, good Lord. And he's
the king shit of Turd Mountain over there right now from all those, the 98, 99 people. You know, it's crazy, crazy time. So Memento, again, kind of a noirish thing, a noirish story, because it's a guy investigating the death of his wife. He has something retrograde memory.
So he doesn't remember like anything.
He can't form new memories.
Yeah.
Is what it is.
All he knows is the old.
It's his hippocampus got damaged. Because that's what makes the new memories. That's what preserves your memories, the hippocampus. If you have a very large hippocampus, you got a lot of memories. Girls are very impressed by a large hippocampus.
Are they?
No.
That's a lie.
No, they're not. Well, you can try it at a bar, see what happens.
Hey, baby, I got a really big hippocampus.
You want to see my hippocampus?
Oh, how would you show her your hippocampus?
I've had an injury.
Okay.
It's just festering. So he's going out, and he's with his buddy Teddy, played by Joey Pants. Joe Pantaleone. Pantaleone? That's what they call him, Joey Pants.
Pants?
He's getting clues as to who the bad guy is, and he's tattooing the clues on his body so he can try to remember what he has to do. And Christopher Nolan fashion, by the time he gets to the end, you're like, oh, shit, that's what was going on the whole time.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff. Good stuff. I mean, it's Memento. It's kind of a classic by now.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in time, it's, what, 14 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that math checks out.
Yeah.
So... people, if you haven't seen it, see it. You gotta see the Memento, which is following was definitely on the Netflix instant. It might still be on there. Memento is for sure on there.
In which case, you should watch it if you haven't seen it.
Watch them, guys. Watch them. Watch them. Following up Memento, Christopher Nolan did his first remake. The remake of a Swiss film?
Damn it.
Swiss. Swiss film.
Swissish.
Swishish. It's 2002? 2003.
2002. One hour, 58 minutes.
Insomnia.
And we're going to play a game, Chris. Name the tagline. This one's silly, just like the last one.
Name the tagline. I can do this. Name the tagline. So okay, good. Name the tagline. For Insomnia. Insomnia's movie about a guy who has insomnia. He's guilty. Guilty conscience. Looking for a killer. Robin Williams is the killer. Robin Williams known for being a funny guy. Al Pacino really known for hoo-ha.
What's the tagline?
The tagline is... Death is funny when you can't sleep.
Days never end. Nightmares are real.
Oh.
No one is innocent.
No! That's horrible.
I know, right?
That's terrible. Marketing department fail on that one. Insomnia is, like I said, it's a remake of a, I'm pretty sure it's either Swiss or Swedish, film from 1997, 98. So the movie was only a couple years old. It wasn't even very old. But the story is almost identical. Not as dark as the original, but, you know, it's an Al Pacino movie funded by a studio, a Hollywood studio. It's not going to, they're not going to go 100% all out, you know, especially in 2002. But Insomnia is cool. It's a good one. It might be, I think it's my, because I don't want to say I don't like it, but I think it's my least favorite of all the Christopher Nolan movies. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, it is good.
Yeah.
But compared to everything else.
Compared to everything else, it's like, yeah.
Everything else is better.
He did adapt the screenplay, but like I said, it was a story. It's a remake of a movie, so, and the story is pretty much the same. So it doesn't have that same Christopher Nolan, you know, wah to it.
Yeah.
And there is like a revelation towards the end, like three quarters of the way through the movie for the main character, but it doesn't have any, like, the same kind of impact as someone following.
No, exactly. It's the one movie that doesn't feel like it's, you know, his.
Kind of, yeah. It feels out of place. It does feel out of place in this whole filmography. I think it's good. It's definitely worth watching. Like I said, the commentary track alone, if you can, buy a DVD, people still have things that play DVDs. If you know what a DVD is, you can get it, listen to the commentary track. Are those things online, commentary?
I have no idea.
Should put those online. And, it's good. It's good. Probably best known for being Robin Williams. It was during that Robin Williams wants to be a bad guy in movies time.
Which was awesome.
Because it was that, and 1 Hour Photo, and Death Smoochie.
Death Smoochie is so fantastic.
And it's something else around that time period. Where he's like, I'm trying to subvert my super nice guy, fluffy, hairy image. And he was good at it.
Yeah, he was really good bad guy.
Rest in peace, Robin. He should have been Riddler at some point.
That would have been awesome. I mean, Jim Carrey was the Riddler.
Oh, no, Jim Carrey was great.
A really weird Riddler.
Jim Carrey was great. Don't get me wrong. Jim Carrey's going to come back up here in a second, actually, in this little... I'm going to tie him into all this. But real quick, just finishing up with Insomnia. What I did like about the movie is that it's a thriller set in a place where it's all daylight, because he's in an Alaskan town where during the time of year where the sun never goes down. So that's part of why he has the insomnia, because of that and the guilty conscious, you know, type of thing. But it was cool because it was supposed to be like a thriller. He's hunting the killer. He's going through the woods sometimes. It was misty out and shit. But the whole time that sun is fucking blaring. Oh. I ain't got nothing.
Good. I don't know. I was like really not in the mood for this right now.
Yeah, I don't have
I'm 9-3.
You were 9-3. 9-3 with the Jello
and the pudding pops
and the Kodak. I don't have nothing. How about this?
No. Continue on. Christopher Nolan.
No, I have anything here. Yeah, we got nothing. So Insomnia, great movie. Not his best. I really enjoy it. But definitely, if I was going to rank him, it'd be at the bottom of the list. Does have that Al Pacino in there, though.
It's got that Hilary Swank up in that bitch, too.
Yeah, Hilary Swank's okay. What I like about the Pacino is when he goes big, like with Nick Cage. It's like, you know?
He didn't do that in this movie.
Only at one moment, because he's playing tired the whole time. Yeah. So he's always talking. So, but then there's one moment where the other cop, like, he tries to tell him, he's like trying to be nice to him, but he doesn't want to hear it, and he's like, all of a sudden, he just yells out, "Fuck you, Cal!" And it's like, whoa. And it gets in his face, and it's really quiet for a second. And he's like, oh, maybe he's right. I'm going to go back and talk like this. Also part of the Christopher Nolan Film School, his personal film school, he did some camera and sound work on training videos.
Okay.
Doesn't say training for what, but who cares about details, right?
Right.
Right. Oh, and he also studied English Lit in college.
Yeah.
So he's a hoity-toity. He's like, ooh, I'm going to learn about Shakespeare. I'm a thoughtful guy. Ooh.
Well, it made him a better writer, and he has written most of the movies he's directed.
Speaking of the way he writes, he does not create a story outline before beginning the writing of a screenplay. However, he does take copious notes regarding events, characters, and ideas. So he'll freeform write a whole bunch of shit,
and then
he'll write the story from start to finish without an outline. I tried both ways.
And?
Neither one benefits me more over the other, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's nice to see where you're going. Sometimes it's nice to discover it along the way. Depends on the story. So, immediately after Insomnia, he was developing a Howard Hughes movie. And that's where Jim Carrey comes in. He was going to make a Howard Hughes movie with Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was going to play Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
But Martin Scorsese and Leo DiCaprio beat him to it with The Aviator. So he put it on the shelf. He was like, maybe I'll come back to this down the road. I haven't heard about it since then.
No.
So that's when he took on his next movie. He was like, you know what? If I can't make this Howard Hughes movie, I got offered this little project here.
Tiny little project.
I got offered this little thing. Warner Brothers was like, we got this property. It's been around for a while. It's been sitting on a shelf because someone killed it with neon and nipples,
yeah,
and plastic molding.
Yeah, they did.
But we're bringing it back. We like what they did with Casino Royale and the rebooted, grittier, darker James Bond. We want to emulate that. We need someone to do that. Christopher Nolan's like, you know what?
I got you.
Batman Begins.
Yeah.
2004?
Five. 2 hours, 20 minutes.
Yeah, 220. 220, a little lengthy. A little lengthy for
it's
a superhero
long one.
Movie.
It's got that Liam Neeson's.
Actually, all of his Batman movies are quite lengthy. It's got the Liam Neeson's. His first time working with Michael Caine.
Definitely not his last.
Definitely not his last. Christian Bale. You know what happened with Christian Bale? You know how he got on the project?
He was Welsh.
No UK connection. What it was in 2000, years before Batman Begins was even a project, and Warner Brothers was still like stinging from Batman and Robin, someone gave Christian Bale a copy of Arkham Asylum.
The video game?
No, 2000.
Oh, so the comic book.
The comic book. The graphic novel. Grant Morrison? I forgot what it was. And he loved it. He was like, how come this isn't the Batman that's been in movies? This is incredible. And he told his agent, if you ever hear about a Batman project, you know, getting revved up, you get me in there. You let me know. Mm-hmm. So he had his eyes on it before it was even formed.
Okay.
He was like that Frenchman who wanted to walk the tightrope between the Twin Towers before it was even built.
Yeah.
He was that guy. Good for
him. He was like, hey, this is going to be awesome.
This is going to be awesome. I want to be a part of it. I want to make sure this is the way it goes down.
Batman Begins.
And then boom, Batman Begins. Gary Oldman.
Yep.
Originally going to play a bad guy. And
ended up playing a good guy.
Someone else was going to play. Chris Cooper was going to play Gordon. Chris Cooper had to drop out. Christopher Nolan was like, hey, you know what? We got Gary Oldman, known for playing bad guys.
He can do
that's
anything.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
How about we ever played a good guy?
It works.
First time you got to play a good guy. Since then, he's kind of been much more mellow Gary Oldman in movies.
Yeah.
No, where's the crazy bad guy, Gary?
I want to see more crazy bad guy, Gary.
I kind of
want
to go back.
I want him to
I've enjoyed.
I want to see him be a Jamaican again.
Yeah. A white Jamaican.
Straight up white. Whitest Jamaican I've ever seen in my life.
It's just weird, like in the movie with the Last Planet of the Apes. It's weird when Gary Oldman plays the guy that's like the most level-headed guy there.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the crazy one.
That's scary.
Anyway. Tangents. But he's one of them. He got him as Gordon. He auditioned a shit ton of people, including Jake Gyllenhaal, who he said had the best audition. That dude from Dawson's Creek.
Which one?
The one that you would imagine, not Vanderbeek, the one with the dark hair.
Okay. What's whoever, I have
exactly,
no idea.
Exactly. He was almost Batman. We auditioned for him.
That's weird.
Cillian Murphy, guy who played Scarecrow.
Yeah.
He auditioned. Nolan liked him so much. It's like, I want you to be my Scarecrow.
Yeah.
They had to convince Nolan to put the mask on Scarecrow.
Oh, really?
He didn't want a mask. They had to convince him to do it. When they did the Batman auditions, with the Gyllenhaal and the Bale and all these guys, they pulled out a mask from storage. One of Val Kilmer's masks from Batman Forever. It's like, here we go. We need to see
it. Put it on. This was from Fat Val.
We need to see you with the mask on. No, that was pre-Fat Val. That was like around the Saint Val.
Oh, that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
That movie. And, I mean, what else can be said about Batman Begins? It's great. There's an extreme lack of CGI, considering how big the movie is. Like, all the shots of Gotham City. You know, that's like a lot of, like, real city shots and then some matte work and some model work. It's incredible. It's really cool to watch all that stuff. The movie itself was good. I think it was a nice way to start. You know, I definitely enjoyed seeing it in the theaters. I remember at the end, the first time I saw it in theater, Pack Theater saw it. And then they had the thing with the Joker card at the end. And everyone was like, oh, shit, oh.
Oh, but even saying, oh, shit, oh, did not prepare me for the Joker.
Oh, for what we actually got?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, we'll get to that when we get to that. That shit's crazy. But first we got the Batman Begins. And only misstep really is the Katie Holmes casting.
Yeah, she's pretty
not good.
Wooden.
Not good. No. Not good.
No.
And they knew it.
They got rid of her.
I actually remember after like the first week or two that the movie came out. And everyone was like, this movie's great. We all like it. We all hate Katie Holmes, but we all like it.
Yeah.
Warner Brothers or whoever, the producer, someone put out a press release saying that, all right, we're going forward, next Batman movie. We have these actors coming back, and they made sure to point out that Katie Holmes will not be returning. And I was like, oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's fucking fascinating. And then, sure enough, got the Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
We couldn't get one Gyllenhaal in here. God damn it, we're going to get a Gyllenhaal in here somewhere. We'll squeeze one in somehow. Can't get a Jake. We'll get old pug face in there.
Seriously, right?
She's something happened, man. She used to be. Anyway, I thought she was really cute. All right. Now, especially when you get to Batman. Now Nolan's working on the upper level of the Hollywood system. He's working with the studio. The studio's funding the shit. You know. As such, he has to answer to Warner Brothers.
Yes.
Here's a quote here. He says, I sometimes get frustrated with studio executives and indeed critics who will watch a film in a very linear way and make notes as they go, because that's not how movies work. You get to the end. The audience gets to the end. And then you take about 5 minutes to decide, okay, what was all that? And your brain really looks at everything in a different way. And then you decide. And that's why endings are so important. And that's why you really have to get to the end of a movie before you know what it is. Which is why we were talking about all the way he makes his movies. And when the movie's over, you're like, oh,
whoa,
shit. That's what was going on. Batman Begins doesn't have that so much because...
it's a Batman movie.
It's a Batman movie. You know, the revelation quote, whatever. There's Liam Neeson pops up at the end. It's like, oh, I'm Ra's al Ghul the whole time. Spoiler alert. When did that movie come out?
2005.
9-year-old spoiler alert. Liam Neeson's Ra's al Ghul. He's the bad guy the whole time.
The Neesons.
And Wayne Manor burns down. He's like, we'll build it back brick by brick.
But not with you, Katie.
But not with you, Katie Holmes. But with a sweet basement. The Batcave.
Yes.
In Batman Begins. First Batcave in a movie, like since the Burton movies, to actually be like a full set. Not enhanced with CG or matte paintings or... any sort of trickery at all. It's like the whole thing is a fucking set. They can just point the camera wherever they want. It's Batcave.
Yeah, that's the way Nolan.
That's the way he works.
Nolan does that.
Yeah,
he likes practical effects.
He loves. Yeah, which is gonna make his outer space movie all the more interesting. I'll save that quote for later. Oh, you know what he does also? Bucks the trend on a movie like this. He doesn't use additional directing units. It's just him. So for people that, in case you don't know what I'm talking about, when you got a big movie like this, oftentimes a director will have a second unit, sometimes even a third unit. And then those units have their own director. And, they're answering to the main director. He's telling them, I need you to go out and get these sequence of shots. And usually it's things like, I need a close-up of a shot of a watch. I need a shot of eggs breaking into a bowl. I just need a shot of cars driving down the street. But he'll send them out to do that shit while, you're working on something else. Then you have huge examples of that, like with Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings. Stuff everywhere.
Yes.
Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings. This dude has like 6-7 units out, spread out around New Zealand, working at the exact same time. And then he's at a tent at a command center where there's just monitors everywhere. And he's like, all right, this unit, they're working over there. These people are doing that, and he's doing orchestrating everything like Ed Harris in Truman Show.
Oh, okay.
Goes, Truman Show's movie without making movies.
So he's more like a general.
And that point, yeah, absolutely he is. And he has no problem having all these other people going out as, quote, unit directors, because he's still the director.
Well, I'm sure he's so sick of these fucking Hobbit movies by now.
Oh, yeah, he's done with it. So you got all that?
Got all that delicious beer off the table.
What a shame. We won't say what beer that got spilled.
Sorry, Tom.
Damn it. Shout out to OPP, Orange Blossom Pilsner, the official beer of Cinema Crispies. Christopher Nolan, he's like, nah. He is like Quentin Tarantino. Nolan and Tarantino have a lot in common. They both love film, hate digital, hate CGI, and they love to shoot everything.
Yeah.
Tarantino goes one step further. He loves to grab the camera. He'll take the camera from his DPs like half the time. Like, no, this is the way I fucking want it. I'm gonna fucking do it. Nolan, he'll let the DPs, at least let's let the DPs work, but he's gonna shoot everything. So he has no second units whatsoever.
Yeah.
I got a quote here. What does he say? He says, if I don't need to be directing the shots that go in the movie, why do I need to be there at all? The screen is the same size for every shot. The little shot will occupy the same screen size as a shot of 1,000 people running down the street. Everything is equally weighted and needs to be considered with equal care. I really do believe that. I don't understand the criteria for parceling things off. Many action films embrace a second unit taking on all the action. For me, that's odd, because then why did you want to do an action film? Paul Greengrass, who did the second two Bourne movies.
Yeah.
The guy's a good director. He made good films before that. He's made good films after that. But for some reason, those two movies, he's like, he didn't want to do the action. And then all the action was shot by this dude, Dan Bradley, who then went on to do the remake of Red Dawn.
So weird.
So, it's strange that some people do that. Christopher Nolan's not like that. He's making a Batman movie. There's going to be a shot of Bruce Wayne, like, putting down the glass on the table. Christopher Nolan's right there behind the camera, making sure that glass, it's perfect. The light hits it just right. The liquid's moving around the way he wants it. Liquid's too yellow. Stuff like that.
Oi.
Oi. I bet you he's cockney. Batman Begins. Huge success. Obviously, he doesn't want to... the studio would love if he jumped right into the next Batman. Batman Begins Part 2. He's like, guys, I kind of want to do something else. Meanwhile, there's this fella out there, a writer named Christopher Priest, wrote a little novel called The Prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And that was being optioned and turned into a film. And he was looking around. He was trying to find a director for his book. And he had someone picked out. And it fell through. And then he's like, what about this Christopher Nolan fella? He did Following and Memento. I like that. I like those movies.
And he can get Batman and Alfred?
I think he can pull it off. So they got Nolan. They talked to him. He saw the project. He liked it. He got Batman. He got Wolverine. Put him in a movie together with some magic fingers.
Yes, lots of wiggly magic fingers.
Waggle magic fingers. Yep. And
Alfred's there too.
Alfred's there too. Boom. The Prestige.
ScarJo.
2006.
Correct. 2 hours, 10 minutes.
Yeah. Because he cranked it out after Batman Begins. Because, I mean, Warner Brothers did want fucking the next Batman movie relatively soon. So he's like, well, I mean, I want to do something else. I gotta have a palate cleanser. So they gave him $50 million to make this movie. And I think it did okay financially. It did all right.
It's an awesome movie. I mean,
it's a great, great movie.
Posters behind me. I mean, David Bowie plays fucking Nikola Tesla.
Come on, guys. It's David Bowie as Tesla. Huge Tesla coils. King Kong himself, Andy Serkis, plays his assistant.
Yes, he does.
Why they had Andy Serkis there do all that motion capture work just to put an Andy Serkis digital thing on top of him, I have no idea. But, hey, that's Christopher Nolan for you, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a crazy movie. That's one. That's now you're going back. Now Nolan found a story that goes back to his earlier stuff. The
weirdness.
The cinematic trickery. Yeah. And then it's very upfront about it in the movie. I mean, the movie's 100%. About magicians. Yeah. And, you know, the whole thing about this is the turn. This is the prestige.
It's a lot more than that, though.
Yeah. It gets crazy. It gets intense. But great, great acting all around. We love Bale. I love Jackman. Kane's great. Michael Rebecca Kane's Hall awesome. Is awesome. Even
Scarlett Johansson.
ScarJo's great. Even Piper Perabo.
Yeah.
I mean, the chick from Coyote Ugly. She's in a Christopher Nolan movie, and it's good. Yeah. That's like when Tara Reid was in a Big Lebowski. You're like, what? But it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
What?
Tara Reid. So you would classify The Prestige, much like the novel, you would classify the movie as magical realism, and not just because there's magic involved, dude, like magicians, but it's a magical realism because it takes place in a real world setting.
There's real things going on.
Real things going on.
But, real people.
But then with hints of, like, something else, like a supernatural.
Hints of Nikola Tesla.
Well, the Tesla stuff, yeah. I mean, some things with Tesla get teased. It's like, is this guy, like, a real fucking wizard? But then when things start going crazy at the end... Yeah. With a Tesla machine that's actually working.
No, like I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's like, what? Yeah. What? What is going on? It's a crazy movie.
Oh, I know exactly what's going on. That's why he's got all the blind people.
The blind people can't. They can't be squealing.
Exactly.
They can't. They can't morally object to what they're doing.
Correct.
Because some people who could see what they're doing might object to Angier's actions.
Yes.
The great Danton. It's a fantastic. Fantastic book. Actually, if you go to chriscrespo.com, you do a search for The Prestige, you'll find one of my book-to-film adaptation articles where I went over how I compared the book to the movie. And because the book has like this whole narrative framing device that takes place in the present day about it, and it's with the fucking descendant, like third generation down of one of the two magicians. I forgot which one. Maybe Angier's, right? Or maybe no, it's Borden. It's like Borden's great 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 grandson, and he goes for whatever reason to visit Angier's great 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 granddaughter, and then that's when like the story unfolds about the it's a weird thing, and it has its own crazy ending. That's kind of similar to The Prestige, but it takes place in the modern day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's strange, but it's interesting to see to read the book, see the movie, and see how Christopher Nolan got to the same place without using that same narrative device. His narrative device was just technically it's Michael Caine's the voiceover, and then the reading of the diaries. It's all voiceover stuff, that's the way the book is. The book is a couple of diaries that you're flipping back and forth between. So he did a great, great job of adapting it. Also, by this point, I want to point out that he's still working with Wally Pfister, his director of photography.
Nice.
At this point, the only movie Pfister hadn't done was Following.
Okay.
Because Nolan shot Following. Yeah. When he did Memento, he wanted another guy to be his director of photography. He wanted to hire someone else, but that guy was busy.
They got Mr. Pfister.
So I was like, let me try out this Wally Pfister
film. And that was the end of that.
That was the end of that. They made the next, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 movies together. The latest one, the one's about to come out, Fisser didn't shoot it. Because he was too busy shooting that horrible Johnny Depp movie that he directed.
Oh, that transcendence.
Transcendence. That's what happens when you're the DP for one of the most successful directors of the last decade. You get a branch off and do your own movie. And then it's like, oh.
Yeah,
this
is not. This is
Can we just watch Lawnmower Man instead?
Yeah, seriously.
At least that one has Pierce Brosnan and Jeff Fahey. And tits, I think. Tits. Show me some tits.
Yeah. I want to see some tits. Tits are nice. Save the tatas, Chris.
Yeah.
I keep seeing stickers about them.
Gotta save them.
Apparently they're in jeopardy.
Save them. They need saving. All shapes and sizes. Sometimes they're different sizes. It's interesting.
Speaking of tatas, did you hear about the girl who got the third one implanted?
Ah, don't tell me you fell for that one.
It's not for reals?
No, of course it's not for reals.
Dude.
TMZ busted her out.
Ah, it's a damn shame. How can I would have figured so. People are stupid, all right?
People are stupid.
People are stupid, and they do really dumb things.
Like, have you heard about the iOS 8? Right? That's what they're up to now, right? With the iPhone, their new software is iOS 8. With the new software update, they implanted an app on the iPhones called Wave, and you put your phone in the microwave and hit power, hit on, and it uses the microwave waves to power to charge your phone.
Yeah.
People believe that shit because someone put it out there, and it was all official looking. It looked like Apple, you know, like something they would do. And then if you look online, there are tons of tweets and pictures of people with their fucked up phones.
From the microwave.
And most of them are like, hey, Apple, your new Wave feature doesn't work.
Hey, idiot, don't put your goddamn electronics in the microwave. No matter what anybody tells you, electronics don't go in the microwave.
Nope. No, they do not.
Put a CD in the microwave. See what happens.
See what happens there. Take some tin foil and make a ring.
And put that in the microwave. See what happens.
Yeah. And then go buy a new microwave. So yeah, people are stupid. Which brings us back to The Prestige. Not really. But we're back there. Great movie. Just see it. Also, at this point, I think The Prestige is the last film, the last Christopher Nolan movie scored by David Julian, who scored all his previous movies at that point, except for Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Batman Begins, Hans Zimmer, because when he make a huge Warner Brothers tentpole movie, it's like, excuse Mr. Zimmer, we got him on call. He's here already.
Yeah.
Here is your music. Here are your choices. The Tom Zimmer. So we got Julian to do the Prestige score, which is great. I love the score, but it's the last time they worked together. Makes me a little sad.
Yeah.
Because they had a nice working relationship. But since then, I mean, it's Hans Zimmer, and it's bombastic, and bomb, 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 bomb. It's all good stuff. And then 2008.
Correct.
You got this. Warner Brothers finally got what they wanted.
The Dark Knight.
They got. Well, first off, let's talk about that. Do you remember how crazy it was at the time? Did you realize how crazy it was when they announced the next Batman movie wasn't going to have the word Batman in the title?
I didn't really care.
You didn't even notice that?
It's not huge fucking news. It's not that I didn't notice it. It's that I didn't care.
You didn't care. People,
I mean, as far as I'm
people
concerned,
in the industry and at the studios and they fucking care. They're like, holy shit, Warner Brothers, that's ballsy.
I'm a comic book guy, so
you're a comic book guy.
You can call it The Dark Knight, and I immediately know who you're talking about.
Warner Brothers knows that the nation is not full of comic book guys like you. Nation's full of moms and dads and idiots.
Yes.
And non-literate, even when it comes to comics.
Correct.
So for them to make a movie that wasn't like Batman, The Dark Knight. They could have just called the movie Colin. They dropped the Batman. Just The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And it fucking worked.
Of course.
Worked like gangbusters for them. Dark Knight broke a couple records. First off, first superhero movie to break $1 billion.
Oh.
First superhero movie to get Academy Award for acting.
Yeah.
You want to take a guess who that one got?
Probably Heath Ledger for his role as the Joker. It was quite possibly the most remarkable piece of acting experience that I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, it's that whole performance, like, it took the country over. everyone was blown away by
why
it.
So serious, Chris?
Why so serious? I remember leading up to the movie coming out, and people were like, "Heath Ledger, oh, this is the worst. He's going to be terrible, blah, blah." People were hating on him.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, all these motherfuckers haven't seen Ned Kelly. You know, these people haven't seen real Heath Ledger movies. They're all thinking of the 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
Or
what's the other night movie?
Night's Tale.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, God, so awful.
No. Heath Ledger did other stuff. I mean, all the people that are like, oh, you know, those comic book nerds that are all fat Cheeto finger stained, yes, basement dwelling idiots.
Uh-huh.
I'm not surprised that those people didn't see Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah.
Not surprised.
No.
Okay. To see the nuanced, incredible performance from Heath Ledger and the almost Batman Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
If you think about it, that movie,
Joker falls in love with almost
Joker
Batman.
Almost fucked Batman in the ass in that movie. Oh man, what an alternate universe that would have been.
That, oh man,
if Jake Gyllenhaal got Batman, and then they still made Brokeback Mountain.
That would have been people's heads would have exploded.
Mommy, why is Joker fucking Bruce Wayne?
Don't worry about it.
How come Batman doesn't stop him?
He likes it.
Who's that? Is that mom? Mom's really getting off on
it. She's doing a Batman voice.
Oh, thanks, Batman voice. Christian Bale lost
Batman
his
voice.
He lost his voice 3 times during the filming of Batman voice.
Because he talks like this the whole time.
But he actually didn't talk not exactly like that. Apparently he spoke a little softer than that on the set, and then Christopher Nolan had the sound people alter
beef
his voice.
Batman-ness.
Beefed it up. Make it more Batman-y. Make it more Batman-y. That hurts my throat. That's what he does,
that's
man.
What he does.
It's like, God damn it, relax.
It's the weirdest Batman voice of them all.
Relax,
I'm sure.
Dude. I mean, it's a great movie.
Oh, it is.
It's Heat with costumes. That's what I say. That's what I've been saying for years.
That
now.
Movie. My favorite scene is when he puts the pencil through that guy's eye.
Pencil through the guy's eye. While he makes Black Dynamite watch.
I still get chills when I watch that.
It's a crazy scene. There's a lot of crazy stuff in that movie. It's. The whole Joker thing, it's done perfectly because it's, you know, order versus anarchy. It's the two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
They're both fighting for the soul of Harvey Dent the whole time. The movie is constructed brilliantly, story-wise, character-wise, theme-wise, from start to finish. That's why the movie is so successful. Not just because it's Batman, not just because, you know, the Joker. All those things add up.
Yeah.
But it's because the story is fucking tight.
It is.
It's really, really good. Even though I do feel at the end, like the last 15, 20 feels just a little rushed.
Yeah.
Because Harvey Dent has to go bad so fast in order for the pacing to keep the movie flying.
Yeah.
Especially when you take the Joker out of the story, you know. But yeah. You know, it's still fucking, goddamn, it's a Dark Knight.
It is.
So goddamn good. After James Cameron, Christopher Nolan is the second director to make 2 films that have grossed more than $1 billion at the worldwide box office. Christopher Nolan is the first director to have released both of those billion-dollar grossing films in 2D only.
Nice.
Those James Cameron cheats. 3D.
Yeah.
Cheater.
That Avatar.
So, I mean, Dark Knight. I mean, what can we say about Dark Knight? Everyone knows it's about awesome. The Dark Knight. It's
Everybody's
a fantastic
it.
Movie. It's brilliant. It's a crime film. It's a crime drama, but with Batman and Joker. Come on. Follow that up with
Inception.
Tiny little movie called Inception.
2010, 2 hours, 28 minutes.
Goddamn, another billion-dollar movie. Which is, that's insane that movie made so much money.
No.
Because it's not based on anything. Comic, no TV show, no remake.
What, written by him and his bro, or just him?
I think that one was just him. That might have been the first one that was just him. Because his brother helped him with everything up to that point. I think Inception was the first time he's like, I'm doing this one on my own. And, oh, wow, what a movie.
Yeah, cool. I mean, the cast is just...
Cast is crazy.
Amazing.
I mean, you got DiCaprio. You got the JGL. You got the Tom Hardy.
You got the Ellen Page. Ken Watanabe.
Cillian
Murphy's back.
You got Pete Postlewaite in one of his final roles.
Yep. Michael Caine's still there.
Michael Caine is back because he's become Christopher Nolan's
fucking Michael Caine.
Lucky talisman.
Seriously.
Incredible cast. Extremely well-made movie. It has a denouement which involves 4 action sequences rising and falling at the same time.
Yeah, and they all rise together, they all fall together.
It's crazy.
There's stuff inside of stuff, inside of stuff, outside of stuff.
They did tricks.
But was it all the same stuff the whole time?
The whole time? Was it top fall at the end, or does it keep going, Drew?
That's up to to you.
No, no, I'm asking you. I have my answer. I want to know your answer.
I have my answer.
I want to know. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, keep spinning.
You think keep spinning? Yeah. I think it doesn't matter.
It doesn't. All I know is that it wobbles. That's as far as it goes.
Yeah, the wobble doesn't matter. It could wobble all once and it goes back to spinning, or it could fall over. It doesn't matter. What matters is that he didn't look back at the top. He didn't care if it was still spinning because he was with his kids. Mm-hmm. Now, whether he was with his kids in some dream world or in the real world,
that all remains to be seen.
Woo! Goo goo! So yeah, I mean, Inception, it made a ton of money. It's a heist movie, but in reverse.
Yeah, they're planting
instead of stealing something, you're putting something in. But otherwise, it's a heist movie, putting a team together. Mm-hmm. Here's our plan. Let's practice. Here's all the exposition. Explain how we're gonna do all this shit. It's fascinating. A fascinating movie. Absolutely love it. And prepping for the show, I really got the urge to just watch it again. I actually got the urge to watch most of these movies again.
No.
Just kind of have a little Nolan-a-thon.
I'd watch Inception again.
Bwah.
I haven't seen it in a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
okay.
See all the lack of red and green?
Yeah.
Where'd all the red and green go, guys? Where'd it go? And then Warner Brothers, they go boop, 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 and they back up the dump truck full of money, and they dump it on his front lawn.
And they say, yo, we need that third movie, bro.
We need that third Batman. And he's like, okay. All right, let's see what I can do here. What can I do with this? David Goyer, who co-wrote all the Batman movies with him, he's the one who told Christopher Nolan about Bane, explained him. Nolan was like, yeah, I can work with that. I can do some parallels to modern terrorism and also some 1% versus 99% type of shit.
And Tom Hardy's all huge, so I'll just throw him in there.
Tom Hardy's all jacked up, but still short, so they had to do a lot of, you know, make sure he's like on stairs and shoot him in ways that he's towering over people when in real life he
doesn't.
Not. Yeah. I do remember reading how Tom Hardy was like, he's watching the Batman movies, he's a fan of Christian Bale, he loves these movies, and all of a sudden one day he's on a set, dressed as Bane, and there's Christian Bale dressed as Batman.
Speaking of Bane, where is Bane?
And they have to have a place. But there he was. There was Christian Bale. Christian Bale was there. And I had to fight him. And I thought to myself, I can do this.
Yes.
Because I'm Bane.
Yeah, yes you are.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty crazy.
No, it is.
Like, oh, look, this guy, he's awesome. On a movie, on the big screen. And then he turned around like, oh, there he is.
Oh, it's Christian Bale.
He's fake punching me. I have to
fake break his back.
I have to fake break his back. And talk like this.
And give lots of exposition.
With a mask on. And then re-record all my dialogue. Now, it's a good movie. If I was going to rank the Batman movies, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, Batman Begins. That's the way I go. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much.
You go the same way?
No.
It's good. It's not as tight as the Dark Knight because you could tell they didn't put the same amount of attention and effort into the story and the themes and the details they did with Dark Knight. With Dark Knight, they were much more inspired.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises, they were more like, let's make some money and try to make a cool Batman movie. Let's end it. Let's close it out. And like we said before, that quote with Nolan where he talks about endings. Fucking, of the three Batman movies, The Dark Knight Rises has the best ending.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The very, very final sequence where we find out what we suspected the whole along, that JGL's cop character is Robin.
Yeah.
And then he finds the Batcave, and it's like, oh, shit, he's going to be Batman / Nightwing / whatever.
Yeah.
Batman's going to, in this world, Batman's going to live on in some way. Even though, is he dead? He might be. Maybe not. Probably not.
Yeah, no,
there's a whole thing with the autopilot was fixed.
Though. Yeah, yeah.
They made sure to point that out.
And the whole thing where at the end they show him eating dinner with somebody.
Well, no, that could have been people.
And Michael Caine's like, Eddie!
Some people online argue that that's like Christopher, that's Michael Caine's like a dream, like a vision. That's what he wishes would happen. Because it's kind of awkward that at the exact same cafe looks up, oh, and there's Bruce Wayne with Catwoman. Oh, and they just happen to be together. You know, it's a little weird. It's a little strange. But again, that part of the story doesn't matter. It's about the symbol of Batman living on. Because if you go back to Batman Begins, Christian Bale.
Symbol live forever.
Yeah, they're talking about that on the airplane before when they're talking about it. Alfred, I want to be a superhero. we need to figure out this budget. After Batman Begins came out, Forbes magazine, they figured out how much it would cost.
To be Batman?
$3.5 million.
That's it?
That's it.
That's all you need to be Batman.
That's all you need to...
Well, do we...
I guess to start up as Batman.
There's going to be 50 Batmans out there right now.
To get all the equipment, to get the facilities, all that stuff, but then the maintenance of it, I don't know. They really go that deep into it.
Chris.
I mean, how much does it cost? The fuel for the tumbler. The real tumbler got 7 miles per gallon.
Chris, if I had...
So imagine how much Bruce Wayne had to spend on fuel.
I'm going to listen to this right now. If I ever have... get a lump sum of $10 million.
Lump sum of $10 million, okay.
I will become Batman.
I am Batman. Okay.
I mean, if it only cost me $3.5 to get started, let's fucking do this.
Are you going to be a goatee Batman? Oh, please be goatee Batman.
Yes.
Can you talk the opposite of that?
Batman at the ghost falsetto?
Batman at a karaoke bar doing Geddy Lee.
Where's
Rachel? Where's Rachel? Oh, salesman. Great movie. Dark Knight Rises. Second favorite of the Batman movies for me. Also, again, it made $1 billion like The Dark Knight. And hugely successful. Christopher Nolan then moves on from The Dark Knight Rises. Warner Brothers has him do... he's kind of godfathering... somewhat overseeing the whole Man of Steel. Like, he was a producer on that.
The Zack Snyder thing.
But really what happened there was him and David Goyer, they cracked the story. They figured out what the general story would be. Goyer started working on the screenplay, and then they picked Zack Snyder, and then Christopher was like, all right, now...
I'm out.
You guys go do this shit. I got some other stuff I'm doing over here on the side. something about outer space or something. So he's been doing a lot of that lately. The DC stuff.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to him for all the Justice League stuff that they're working on.
I'm sure.
You know, but I mean, it's not like, I don't think they're giving him like Joss Whedon levels of control that Marvel gave him over there for.
Yeah, no.
Because he's overseeing everything. He's making sure everything is lined up for him to do his Avengers movies the way he wants to do them.
Yeah.
You know, which is that's some damn power right there. Crazy damn power. Makes me wish I was more of a Whedon fan.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's cool that every member of the Avengers is like Han Solo, but if they're all Han Solo, then no one would be Han Solo.
Exactly.
So, Dark Knight Rises was 2010? 2011?
Rises?
Yeah,
12.
Yeah, that's what I meant, 2012. Okay. Yeah, so, ready now, 2 years later, get ready for the new Nolan.
Hell yeah.
Thank God, Interstellar comes out in November.
Gonna be good.
Very excited for it.
McConaughey, McConaughey.
The McConaissance continues. Now, again, now from the trailer, we'll talk about the trailer in a second. Up until this movie, every single Nolan movie has been in some way, shape, or form about identity.
Yeah.
The Batman movies, obviously, identity is a huge issue. Secret identity and all that stuff.
No.
The prestige, the identities of the magicians, their real identities, and all that stuff comes into play. Mentor, you already talked about. Following, you already talked about. That's his thing. Inception.
Inside the mind.
You're going into the identity.
Yeah.
And extracting from it and using it and Tom Hardy, he's always using that against you, and like he's always changing. He's the forger type thing, you know. Now with Inception, Chris Nolan's been on record saying that is a movie more about making movies, you know. Dom is the director. JGL, his character, is the producer.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy is the actor. What's her name? Ellen Page. She's the writer. And who's that other guy? That's over there? Ken Watanabe, executive producer. The Money Studio. Yeah. The Indian dude. He's like the Teamsters and the, you know, all rolled into one.
Yeah.
The sound guy, the whips. Okay. He's driving people around.
Interesting.
Actually, no. He's the writer. You know why he's the writer? Because when he makes cool things happen, no one notices.
No.
No one notices the writer. That's why he's the writer. So I forgot what Alan Page was. Anyway. Interstellar. That's about space exploration. Wormholes and shit. And science fiction.
No.
Although he does say here, I think I'm not so much a fan of science fiction as I am a fan of cinema that creates worlds, that creates an entire alternate universe that he could escape into for a couple of hours. I think anytime you look at science fiction in movies, there are key touchstones. Metropolis from 1927, Blade Runner 1982, and 2001 A Space Odyssey from 1968. Whenever you're talking about getting off the planet, 2001 is somewhat unavoidable. And if you watch the Interstellar trailer, there are shots
seems
there.
The same way.
Yeah, it's like he's purposefully trying to recall 2001 with some of his shots. Like, this is my inspiration, you know, which is very cool. So the trailer's out there. There's a couple of trailers, but there's a long one that we keep seeing in front of the theaters.
Yes.
What can you glean from that trailer so far about where do you think the movie might be going in terms of story?
I mean, I think it's going to last. I mean, you see shots of the young boy and the little redhead girl,
right?
And then,
which are I assume is kids,
exactly. And then you see shots of Jessica Chastain,
yes,
and Casey Affleck on the same farm,
grown up versions. Oh, that's how that's gonna work in.
I don't know if he's gonna go as far as to maybe making them even older too, and that's just not in the trailers to not give it all completely away.
So then when he worms his way back to Earth, for him
it's only been
a year or two,
exactly. But here on Earth, he's been traveling at the speed of light. Einstein's theory of relativity comes into play.
So his kids are like, he comes back and they're 80 years
old.
Yeah,
exactly.
I can see that being for sure. Yeah, I didn't put that together at all. I didn't even think about that. When I watch trailers, I'm like, oh, I have a space hole. He's a kid. Oh, Jessica Chastain. That's interesting. You know, I don't put them together like
that.
I know, it's got to be really obvious.
It took me a couple watchings of the trailer to be like, wait a minute, the little girl has got red hair. Jessica Chastain has red hair.
Does anyone call her Murphy at any point?
Murph! I'm sitting there going, and I'm like, this is long space, wormholes, time travel. Oh, shit.
Yeah. Ah. Genius. Drewster Cockburn's cracked the code. And the Rubik's Cube at the very end is going to snap into place. And you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
McConaughey. Yeah, I can't wait for that movie. November 7th.
It's going to be good.
Try to see it on the largest screen possible because much of the movie is going to be shot with IMAX cameras, large formats.
We'll be seeing it at the IMAX.
The Dark Knight had up to 40 minutes of IMAX footage in there.
Did.
Dark Knight Rises similarly had like 40, 45 minutes, I think.
Was that the last time we went to the IMAX?
Dark Knight Rises. That was the last time I went to the real IMAX.
No.
So 2 years ago. No. I'm only going back now for another Nolan movie. So there you go. Well, I'll be back there next year for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because Star Wars is shot with IMAX cameras. On the Dark Knight, I think it was the Dark Knight, they were using all four of the IMAX cameras that were
available
in the world. Like, there were, at that time,
ours.
Maybe they've built more since then. Yeah. I know they've definitely developed digital cameras, which seems like just wrong-headed.
Yeah.
IMAX digital. And they've also built they've built a camera that does film, but it's smaller. The problem with the IMAX cameras is that they're so big, they make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
So it's hard to shoot quiet dialogue scenes
with all the noise going.
Yeah, you'd have to do everything in ADR. A lot of directors hate ADR because, rightfully so, ADR is fucking horrible. On the Dark Knight, only 40th cameras in the world. They broke one. Actually, the wording I saw didn't say broke. It was destroyed.
So they destroyed one quarter of the Earth's IMAX cameras.
Yes.
All right.
That's an oops. That's when he called the insurance company. Like,
hey there.
They're like, we're going to have to send an adjuster down there to do a little investigating. So yeah, you got to see Interstellar on a huge screen to see that IMAX stuff, especially if you can find an IMAX theater, like a real one, not one of these fake ones that's just the digital, but it mean like fucking goddamn.
Orlando
here locally, Orlando, you'll find that. If you go online, you look up IMAX versus IMAX, you'll find articles and charts and things out there pointing to all the real IMAX theaters in the country. There's only like 200 or 300 of them.
Well, we've got one here.
And we've got one right here. We got to use that thing. We got to use that thing. So there you go. That's it. That's your Crespedisto Film School with Christopher Nolan. Give me a couple things, right?
A couple.
Feel a little more Nolan-ish?
No. I mean, like I said, I've seen all of his movies.
You're not feeling inspired. You haven't seen Following.
Yeah. I do feel like impaling your head on a pencil.
Yeah, but that's, what is that? How is that different from any other day?
It really isn't.
Exactly. So, thanks, guys, for listening. We really appreciate it. Share the show with everyone else. Download us on Stitcher and iTunes. I don't want to tell you to do that. You've already done it. Rate us and review us. Go to ChrisCusper.com. Email the show at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Tweet me at IamChrisCrespo. Tweet Drew at antihero419. And we're done.